Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, two Wisconsin researchers are working on developing a solvent-based multi-layer plastic recycling process that could put down or could cut down on millions of tons of plastic waste. In the studio with us is a returning guest, George Huber. He's the Richard L. Antoine Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. And he's recently been appointed to head the U.S. Department of Energy Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics. George Huber, welcome.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Also with us and working on the solvent-based plastic recycling process is Reed Van Lan, the Conway Assistant Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. And Reed, welcome.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you with us. And as you listen to these two experts, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. What do you want to know about the challenges and complexities of recycling? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. George, let's start with you. Before we get too much into your recent developments, let's talk about the problem. What are some of the big problems in our recycling system today, especially in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think the main challenge with plastic recycling is we don't know how to recycle most plastics. Plastics, there's such a wide variety of different plastics that we have. In Wisconsin, there's only two we're mandated to recycle by law. That's rigid number one and number two plastics, but all the rest of the plastics go to landfill.
Well, and here we live in a system of consumer-driven recycling. What does that mean?
I mean, the recycling infrastructure just has not developed to the state where we can take any type of plastics and recycle it and then make the a plastic that can be reused for the same purposes that virgin plastic was used for.
Yeah. Let's talk about multi-layer plastics for a minute. What kind of containers are we talking about here?
A lot of your food packaging, when you go to the grocery store, you look at your yogurt containers. A lot of food used to be packaged in glass in the past. Now it's being replaced with plastic packaging. And you put several different layers in there. One protects against water. One helps the ink stay on it better and looks better on the shelf, makes it more rigid. So a lot of the food now is used with plastic packaging, multi-layer plastic packaking material.
Yeah. Well, Reed, why can't we recycle these plastic right now? What's preventing it?
Yeah, so the challenges associated with multi-layer films in particular is that they typically have something like 2 to 17 different plastic or even other components, which is a huge challenge when you think about existing commercially adopted recycling techniques. So one might imagine something like mechanical recycling, where essentially I try to compact my plastic waste and then reuse it. When I have so many different layers that are often bonded together with adhesives, I can't easily separate those different layers mechanically. So we need new techniques that allow us to identify and sort of recover each of those independent layers in order to remake the virgin films.
Yeah. Well, George, could part of the resolution to this problem be to look to how manufacturers and companies are packaging their products so we have fewer of these multi-layer plastics? Or is that not feasible?
I think industry is actually going the other way, where they're using more of these multi-layer plastics for packaging because they have a lot of advantages in that your food will stay longer. You can put it in smaller sizes, so you can get it to the food preservation is longer with a multi-layer film. So industry actually prefers those. You can go to lighter plastics as well.
I think
we need to develop the technology to learn how to recycle these multi-layer films.
Yeah. And well, Reed, can you talk about how this solvent-based method works? What's a solvent to begin with, I guess, is probably a way to start.
Sure. So the basic principle is probably, you know, best explained in the context of maybe cooking. So when we think about cooking something, we might take our salt and put it into boiling water and we watch the salt dissolve. So in that case, we would call the water a solvent for the salt in the sense that it takes an originally solid material and then breaks it down into essentially atomic components that can spread throughout the initial water, which is liquid. So we can imagine many other types of solvents. So the oil that you might have in your house could also be considered a solvent for different types of materials. So the process that we're developing is based on a similar concept, except now instead of dissolving salt in water, we're trying to take a solid plastic film and dissolve into a series of different solvents, each of which would then contain a single layer of the original plastic film. I can then essentially evaporate the solvent away to get back the original plastic material.
Whoa, that sounds like it could be a... How do you decide what kind of solvents are the right ones to use?
Yeah, and I think that's really one of the major technical challenges that you've hit on there, Larry, which is that there's enormous numbers of different solvents that are possible to select. And there's really multiple different characteristics that we have to consider. So first is that you have to choose a solvent that is going to actually dissolve the material that you want. So I said water, but in most cases, water is not going to do the job or else our plastic food packaging wouldn't be very effective. So we can turn to the hundreds of different industrially used solvents, but we have to gauge not only how efficient they are at dissolving one material, but how poor they are at dissolving another. Because what I really want to do is, let's say I take a three-layer film, I want to dissolve one of the components, not the other two. So my group is developing computational methods to help guide that selection based on our understanding of interactions between solvent molecules and the polymers that we're trying to recover.
Wow. So you're using mathematics.
Yeah, I like to think that the type of techniques that we use are based on the same type of physics that you would learn in high school. So you might recall Newton's equations of motion, you know, force is equal to mass times acceleration. So the idea is that what if we can apply those equations, but not to, let's say, golf balls or something like that, but rather to atoms that are moving at extremely small length scale. If we could predict the motion of all those atoms and predict the forces acting between them, then similarly, we can predict whether there'll be the types of interactions that would lead to the dissolution of a polymer and a solvent. Now, we didn't invent these methods. I mean, these methods have been around for a long time, but we're using these types of computational tools where we basically predict interactions at atomic length scales to identify solvents that are going to be optimal for dissolving selected components of the films we want to recycle.
That's really cool. Well, let's take a couple of calls. Tom in Madison, will give you a chance to join in. Tom, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I just wanted to follow on the point just made there. And could a series of solvent baths do this so that various parts of the plastic precipitate out in, you know, successive baths until you're left with finally what won't be able to be recycled? But that's just a comment. What I was wondering about is the labeling that was invented by a woman up in Sauk County, I believe, and manufacturers use, you know, 1 through 8 or whatever the numbering sequence is in a little recyclable triangle logo. But I've heard that the number one plastics are actually not recyclable, but that they kind of hoodwink the public by putting this logo on the plastic. Wouldn't it be better if indeed a number one plastic is not recyclable to simply print that phrase, not recyclable, and use the numbering system only on those that are recyclable?
Interesting. George, you want to take a crack at that first?
Sure. So I think your first comment about the solvent washes is exactly what we propose to do with the strap process. And the challenge is finding the correct solvent, and Reed has the right tools to help us understand the solvent and do this in an economical way, because any type of plastic recycling has to also be economical, and these are things we look at very carefully as well as chemical engineers. In the comments about the labeling system is not the best way to talk about plastic recycling. Number one, plastics, the PET plastics are actually recycled in Wisconsin. There's a big market for recycling of PET plastics, but some of the other plastics we do not recycle, and we need to have better way. There are other ways we are developing to label plastics, and other technologies, approaches, industry is trying to develop to recycle plastics right now.
Interesting. Anything to add there, Reed?
No, I think George has it covered on this one.
Okay. Tom, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Mo in Oconto. Mo, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, guys. Here's a couple of thoughts that I have. One is, if people would just go to Rolling Stone magazine and look at Planet Plastic, they're suggesting, and we've heard about this, microparticles in water and on tops of mountains. They say people are ingesting 2,000 particles of plastic a week. And plastic is like a poison. And we're actually trying to promote more use. And the industry has talked about recycling for decades now. And they really haven't been doing a good job. It was, just like one caller said, a hoodwink. And how can consumers ban plastic? It seems like that would be a better use, and use something like cans or glass, something that can be recycled. Because if it's cheaper to make new plastic, why would a company recycle plastic? And it seems like you're perpetuating this poisonous plastic.
Well, Reed, do you want to chime in?
Sure. I'll add a couple comments. So thank you, Mo, for the question. So a few comments are that, yes, what would be called microplastics, so the particles that you're discussing, are serious contaminants in the environment and is one of the major environmental hazards associated with the plastic infrastructure. But there's good news, which is that this hazard has been recognized by major funding agencies of scientific research. So, for example, the National Science Foundation has just funded an effort as part of their 2019 and 2020 funding cycle to aim at microplastic cleanup and remediation. So certainly there's ideas of technology being targeted at these challenges. Now, with respect to industry buy-in to the recycling infrastructure, one thing that George did not mention is that we are working with industry partners in the development of our technology. They're very interested in trying to make this economically feasible. And they've also expressed to us that there's a significant amount of consumer demand for recycling. So I like to think that there's certainly more hope of complete industry buy-in towards the recycling problem over the next several years.
Thank you very much for calling, Mo. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with George Huber. He's the Richard L. Antoine Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. And Reed Van Lan, who is the Conway Assistant Professor of Chemical and Biological and Engineering at UW-Madison. Great to have them with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at recycling multi-layer plastics on the show today with our two guests, George Huber and Reed Van Lan from George is a professor in chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison, and Reed is a Conway assistant professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW. So great to have both of them with us. Bob in Madison has a comment or question. Bob, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I live outside. I'm on the road here, but I live outside of Chicago in a community called Wheaton, and I'm on our environmental commission there. And I was surprised to hear that in Wisconsin that you take plastics number one and number two. Yet our recycler, it's called Lakeshore, they say they'll take all the plastics except number six. And I'm just curious, gentlemen, why we would be different and we would accept more than Wisconsin, or are we just, are they just telling us that and throwing away all the other numbers?
George, comment?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I know enough about the laws in Wisconsin versus Illinois. In Wisconsin, there's only two plastics we're mandated to recycle, number one and two. Let me tell you a little bit about the plastic recycling infrastructure. We have single facilities that take all our plastics together, and we send them to one separate facility called a MRF, Material Recovery Facility, and then they sort them out. In Wisconsin, they sort out the number ones, twos, and number five plastics, and then they bell them, and then they sell them to a secondary recycler who's going to take them and then further process them and try and turn them into materials that can then be sold on the market to make other products. You could do that with probably number four, number three plastics as well. I don't understand enough about the laws difference between Illinois and Wisconsin. So, And definitely government policy is very important with plastic recycling. It's important that we have the policy that encourages municipalities and companies to do more recycling as well.
Yeah. Reed, anything to add there?
No, I'm also not familiar with the differences in laws between Wisconsin and Chicago, so I apologize.
Part of it may have to do with just can you sell it or not, or is there enough of it to make a profit for a company? I'm just guessing, but that may be. Bob, yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, no, there's a market for these recovered number one and two bales, and what do you do with them? And then there's even technology for how you take those and then turn them into the resins again that can be reused to make the plastics.
Mm. And you, George, you've already had success with one multi-layer plastic, haven't you?
Yes, we've one multi-layer plastic. We can do very well. We're working with the company to take more multi-layer films. There's dozens of different multi-layer films that are made, but we have a framework to know how to approach these multi-layer films and know how to recycle them now. And we can make them at cost cheaper than the virgin material.
Oh, so the final result is that the materials will be able to be reused then too.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We're making the pure resins from the multi-layer film, and then you can go back directly reuse them to make the film. Now, the multi-layer films Reed and I are working on are post-industrial waste. So these are waste streams that are at the multi-layer film manufacturers where they have known compositions, and we're applying our technologies to those waste streams first. In the future, we're going to apply our technology to post-consumer waste that would come from these MRF facilities I talked to you about that would be have contamination and other food waste as well. But we haven't applied our STRAP technology to those more complex waste streams yet. Tackling the simple waste streams first, which is the post-industrial waste streams.
Okay. Chris in Port Wing, Wisconsin, let's give you a chance. Hi, Chris.
Thanks. A very interesting program. You know, I'm wondering, understanding that Europe has mandated an end to all single-use plastic, and large industrial oil companies like the Koch Industries are investing heavily in new plastic manufacturing to kind of take up the slack of the end of fossil fuel for transportation that's going to be happening. They're investing billions in new plastic plants as a way to use up their oil. Is there any research going on the front end of this rather than on the waste end of it to try and get and eliminate single-use plastic, but then make plastic reusable and recyclable on the front end so your guys' work isn't so hard in the end that the products coming to you? I mean, right now, your work's going to be great for trying to take care of, like, the plastic gyre in the oceans. That stuff has got to be dealt with. You're dealing with old plastics there. But can we research and look at new ways to deal with non-single-use plastic that will be easy to recycle? And thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for calling. Reed, maybe you could comment first.
Sure. That's a great point, Chris, and one that is certainly being researched. So a lot of the fundamental research in polymers for recycling technologies is actually designed at replacing current plastics with plastics that would be more biodegradable, for example, that could break down in household compost rather than industrial composting streams, or plastics that could be more easily recycled for a circular application. I think the challenge there, as you identified, is that, you know, a lot of these materials are still a ways off, and for things like their economic efficiency is yet to be evaluated. So we see the type of technology that we're developing as more of a near-term plastic recycling solution that in the longer term could be supplemented by the development of new polymers or plastics at the front end, as you said. So yes, there's certainly a lot of research being done, again, being funded largely in the academic community.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Joan in Watertown, it's your turn. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I remember back in the early 80s when I was studying environmental topics in college, when we talked about recycling, we talked about the fact that the process of recycling certain things like plastics, especially plastics, was actually more damaging or could be more damaging to the ecology than the initial process of creating the plastic. And so I'm wondering here about these solvents. Are they, besides being economically sound, are you looking for ecological soundness of these processes?
Oh, another good question. Let's see. Reed, you want to take a crack there?
Sure. Thanks. It's a great question. I'm sorry I missed the name. So one of the aspects of the research being done, not by myself and George, but by some of our collaborators in the Center for the Upcycling of Plastic Waste, is what's called techno-economic analysis and life cycle analysis. So these are basically tools that try to address the very question that you asked. What are the trade-offs as we develop a process in terms of the economic viability, as well as other costs like carbon costs when we think about issues related to climate change, as well as what happens to the materials at the end of their life cycle? So these are very valid questions, and they're things that can be now quantified through different types of computational modeling processes than the ones that I employ. So for the context of solvents, for example, one of the things that we're trying to do is not just design processes based on the solvents that might be commercially easily accessible off the shelf, but identify new classes of what would be called green solvents, or solvents that are maybe more friendly to the environment, that could be dropped in to replace common solvents, maybe at an extra cost, but at a better overall impact on the environment. And so our computational tools can help with identifying those types of replacement solvent strategies.
Interesting. Thanks again, Joan. Appreciate it. Laura in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have been recycling since the late 70s, and I'm trying to clarify. Are you saying that everything but number one and two plastics has ended up in a landfill? And if that is true, why has the technology taken this long to develop? I'm glad to hear you people are working on it, but I thought I was only concerned about the plastics that China was no longer taking to recycle. But it sounds like I should have been worried long ago.
Hmm. George, comment?
Yeah, no, I think I was kind of surprised to learn that as well, about how few plastics we can actually recycle. And it's number one and two rigid plastics, not film. So a lot of plastic packaging is the plastic films. Those we do not recycle today, or the plastic bags. Occasionally you can take those to Target, and some of the Targets say they'll take those and recycle those. But a lot of the plastic materials, we don't have the technology and the infrastructure to recycle those. So as chemical engineers, we have this unique skill set to be able to tackle this problem and develop that plastic recycling technology. And that's what we hope to do here at University of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Laura, thank you very much. Robert in Chicago, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi there. So I have a quick question for the researchers. So I work in the plastics and packaging industry. I was wondering if your research in using solvent-based mediums in order to dissolve these plastics, would they be able to be, like the plastics that are dissolved, be able to be reused like in the system for something like food contact, something through the FDA regulation that would require you to register your particular method. Do you feel that the solvents are going to be able to produce like these dissolved plastics into something that's functionally reusable?
Reed, what do you think?
Sure. So another great question. So right now, as George mentioned, we're focusing on post-industrial waste streams. So the idea would be to actually reuse the polymer resins right now for maybe the production of products that don't necessarily require food contact, because as the caller said, that there are additional limitations. We need to basically continue doing additional research to check for things like, you know, retained solvent that could lead to potential food contact issues. And that's research that will be done in the context of the center that was described earlier. So right now, we're mostly focusing on producing the virgin resins for non-consumer applications or non-food applications. But that's something that will continue to develop as we move forward with this process.
Thank you.
And we do have some debate about that. With post-industrial waste, it's a lot easier to reuse the plastics for food applications. The level of solvents that are trapped in the polymer are very, very low. So we do think that these plastics could potentially be reused for food applications.
Okay, there you go, Robert. Thank you. Greg in Waukesha, on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Thank you. I have two questions. One of them is pretty quick. Are there any classes of plastics that are more valuable when they're burned, or can they be burned as a source of heat? That's the first question. The second question, though, is in the 1990s and 2000s, there was a big push in the industrial microbiology world to produce lactic acid by fermentation and use that to make polylactic acid, supposedly biodegradable plastics. And it received a lot of hype, but whatever happened to those polylactide plastics? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. So a couple of questions there from Greg. Reed, do you want to chime in?
I think actually these would be probably better answered by George, specifically the burning. Yeah, please.
Yeah. Okay. George, go ahead.
Yeah. Polylactic acid is commercial scale today. I think there's 80,000 tons of polylactic acid that's produced. There's lots of materials that are made from it, and you can go to the grocery store or go when you order food, sometimes you'll see forks that are made with the polylactic acid or coffee cup lids or other things like that, other materials. So polylactic acid is being used today.
Okay. And let's see, did we get everything? Did we answer everything? Reed, did we get it all?
I believe the caller had a second question. Again, George would probably be best to answer this one in context of burning for fuel as opposed to recycling.
Oh, burning for fuel. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I forgot about that question. Yeah. 14% of plastics is burned for fuel. That is definitely one option. In different regions of the U.S., they burn their municipal solid waste, which has large amounts of plastics in them. That is an option we look at as part of our Center for Upcycling Waste Plastics, and we look at the energy cost, the life cycle cost of just burning the plastics. I think there's probably more efficient ways to use plastics rather than burn them, especially when you're looking at post-industrial waste, which are all collected at one central location. You have large amounts of it, a known composition. So I think there are alternatives to just burning your plastic waste that are probably better.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ron in Madison will turn to you. Ron, hello.
Thanks. Disclosure, over 7 years ago, I survived 7 days working in a recycling sorting plant. Okay. I heard conflicting information in this program in my ears, so I'll just jump to the number five. When the number five plastic leaves sorting plants in Wisconsin, does it go into a landfill? Or does it go to a commercial company that does something else with it? And then the follow-up on the burning, how hot and how much excess oxygen is necessary in a boiler to break down a mixture of seven or more different plastic compounds into carbon dioxide, water, and simple chlorine-containing molecules. Thanks.
All right. Okay, it's probably George. You want to start?
Yeah, very, very technical questions. There are MRF facilities in Wisconsin that do separate out the number five plastics. And when we talk about separate out, they take what your recycler sends to them, and they sort them into number one, number two, and some number five, and then they're sold on the open market to the secondary plastic recycler. Okay, so the municipality views their job of recycling as being done to take your waste plastics and put it into large pellets. I imagine there's secondary manufacturers who take those pallets, and then they make pellets of polypropylene and polyethylene and PET from them. One of the companies in Madison is Placon, if you want to look them up. In terms of the amount of oxygen, the temperature, I don't know for plastics. I do know several companies who do this. One is several companies, mainly on the eastern United States, who take municipal solid waste that has the plastics in them, and they burn them in a boiler. And then they, of course, they take the gases, they remove any impurities in them, like the chlorine gas, by scrubbing that out and try and have a clean stream come out. And in other countries as well, they do a lot more of the burning their waste material rather than landfilling them. Hopefully
All
that
right.
answered the question.
Yeah, Ron, thank you. Tim and Ladysmith, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Well, thank you for taking my call today. I guess the question I have is related to consumerism, and my question is, and perhaps maybe your guests can't answer this, but I'm wondering, as one of your callers had mentioned that she's been recycling for decades and wasn't aware of what numbers were available for recycling, is there any plans or would there be any possibilities for legislation that would force vendors and sales to include placards or notices to inform the customers as to what is recyclable and what isn't, so it can keep them from increasing purchases of things that are just going to end up possibly in our environments where microplastics can actually injure the consumers, especially looking forward to saving the planet for our children. Thanks. I'll take my answer offline.
All right. Thank you, Tim, for calling. Well, either one of you guys know anything about this? George, do you want to take a crack?
I'll take a crack. I mean, I think these are all very important questions. There's lots of questions about plastic recycling. There are other ways companies are looking at doing their labeling systems rather than these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 labeling systems. It's very hard to know all the different plastic components that go into any package material because oftentimes these plastics come in multi-layer films. Actually, and the films, we can't even films and rigid materials as well. And it's hard to, know what those plastics are and know how to recycle them. So it's very challenging. I don't know, Reed, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would want to add is that, obviously there has been a lot of consumer demand in terms of improved labeling, understanding of the plastic recycling industry. And I think one of the things that has emerged from this is an increased number of consortiums. So, for example, there's something called the Resource Plastic Consortium, which is trying to basically standardize and share best practices amongst major companies that are members, companies like McDonald's and Starbucks. So I think what you'll see is that, even if there isn't legislation that mandates changes to labeling, there might be best practices shared by these major companies that emerges from just some of the efforts that they're sharing amongst themselves.
Interesting. Peter in Washburn, we're on to you now. Hi, Peter. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I had read probably about a year ago about a plant in Colorado that could take all plastic, no matter what, didn't require any processing, and it could be converted into pure diesel fuel, and that would replace some of the diesel fuel that we're pumping out of the ground. And it said they were going to put another plant somewhere else in the Northwest. And I was wondering, is it really happening? Because it sounded like it was a very financially viable thing from the person that was giving the interview.
George?
Yeah, so this is, they probably use a technology called pyrolysis where you heat the plastics up without oxygen, so then you collect it, make an oil. That's a very realistic technology that several people have used. There's challenges with that. I think if you have PVC in there, you'll have to clean up the chlorine and you have to process them. And then so you could use the oil you make. It's called a pyrolysis oil, and you could use it to make diesel fuel. Another option is you could feed it into what's called a steam cracker and reuse it to remake the plastic materials themselves. And so we're evaluating these technologies. We're doing some of these using some of these technologies in the lab today at University of Wisconsin. And so it's something we're very familiar with and we're studying. I think economically, going from waste plastics to diesel fuel, it will all depend on the cost and how much waste plastics you can get in that central location. And I think it's challenging to get that volume of waste plastics. And I think it's probably what companies are looking more at is feeding this into the steam cracker. It's a big plant called steam cracker, and remaking the plastics themselves.
Hmm. Jim in Cedarburg says he had recently heard that a researcher created a base polymer from which any kind of plastic could be produced. How probable is that the industry will convert and use this technology if it exists, and wondering about the economics of it? Reed, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure to what the polymer to which the caller is referring, but I think this goes back to what an earlier caller asked about, which is, are there efforts to improve polymer development on the front end to design polymers that could be used in plastic packaging or other applications that might be more easily recycled at the end of life? And there certainly are efforts. A lot of those efforts right now are still in the early stage of technology development and maybe don't necessarily have manufacturing facilities to scale them up or accurate assessments of their economic viability. So I think in the near term, we're going to still have to wait on some of replacements for the polymers in use today.
Yeah. And George, you've already had success with, as we talked about, with the one multi-layer plastic in terms of your processes. Where are you, or how confident are you in thinking you're going to be able to move forward with more processes?
Yeah, I think we're fairly confident that we'll be able to handle other types of plastic waste. It just depends on what's in them. And we have rules already. We've tested, maybe three or four other different types of multi-layer films. We're at the laboratory stage now. So one of my graduate students is making these plastics in the labs. He's resending them back to the multi-layer film manufacturer. They've analyzed them. They have small amounts of material, not enough material to test them and actually remake their multi-layer film. So we need to now make larger volumes of recycled products that they can then retest and remake these multi-layer films.
Well, you guys are doing some really creative and interesting work. I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, everyone, for your questions. I think it's important for the public to be very interested in these plastic recycling technologies to continue to move them forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. This was fantastic. Great questions.
Great questions. George Huber, one of our guests, the Richard L. Antoine Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. The other, Reed Van Lan, who is the Conway Assistant Professor of Chemical and Biological Engineering at UW-Madison. And some interesting work. And we're going to keep up with them and see what we can sort of keep track of what they're up to as time goes on here. Very interesting. Well, the weather's always interesting to me as well. I hope it is to you, because our weather guys are up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.